Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm going to do a kind of recap of what I've been talking about over, the whole time. Cover story, undercover, the danger of uncovering, and catastrophic expectations. I'm just going to talk a little bit about each of these things, and then I'm going to introduce the interview for today, which is actor Jimmy Clark, a man who is very much who he is. It's a fascinating interview, so hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down
Show, and you know if you've been listening, is all about finding, discovering, uncovering, recovering who you really are. Again, if you've been listening, you know that I think that most of us are pretending to be less than we really are. I've seen in my private practice as a psychotherapist over what is now more than 30 years, and, of course, in my own life, and if you look, you will see it everywhere, that most of us are presenting a version of ourselves which is only part of the truth. We learned in our childhood what qualities, what behaviors, what actions, what thoughts, what instincts did not work in our family of origin. And we found a way first to pretend that that wasn't there, and then to hide those things so deeply undercover that we ourselves came to believe that only those qualities which we presented were true of us. Now, you can see, it's not that complicated. In order to suppress even small amounts of who you are, you have to squander a tremendous amount of energy. You have to be on guard all the time for that quality which you do not want to express, to keep it from slipping out. In a session, I'm not sure how long ago, I talked about one of the ways to discover your undercover qualities, those qualities which you had to hide even from yourself. And I used the expression, if you spot it, you got it. If you see somebody who is demonstrating a quality which you find absolutely repugnant, you cannot tolerate this person. This person really gets your goat. And sometimes it isn't even somebody who you know, this can be a character in a film or a colleague that you don't have that much to do with, or a cousin, you know, or a neighbor. But that person really pisses you off, gets you going. So that pretty much means that that quality, whatever it is that they are demonstrating, is an undercover quality for you, one that you decided was ugly or dangerous, and so hid deep inside. Now, when we grow up, sometimes it becomes important for us to have access to some of those qualities. Let's say you had a family who believed the old chestnut children should be seen and not heard. And your parents discouraged you and maybe your siblings, or maybe not, from expressing an opinion, from exploding or being, active in the discussion. And you learned that it was dangerous or ugly to come out with your opinion, to tell other people what you thought, to be assertive. Well, perhaps later in life, there's a circumstance which actually demands of you that you are assertive, forthcoming, blunt even. And if you're not, there can be a price to pay. So perhaps you need to tell someone who is treating you badly to back off. Perhaps you need to defend yourself in some situation. But you've hidden your capacity to do that so deeply undercover that you don't even know you have it. So this show is about trying to discover what you may have hidden, even from yourself. And having discovered it, begin to look for it, because it'll sneak out. And of course, we will talk more about how you recover these undercover qualities later. I've been talking over the last few weeks about the danger of doing that and what are catastrophic expectations about doing that, exposing undercover qualities might be. And I will continue to do that, but in this show, I'm going to play an interview with actor Jimmy Clark, who's a member of the Oslo Repertory Theatre and is performing currently, as he does every year, in at least three different plays there. And Jimmy is the poster child for being who you really are. In Jimmy, we have an example of a guy whose family, his mother, you'll hear him talk about it, did not tell him who he had to be or why he shouldn't be who he is, but told him instead, this is who you are. You don't have to make the world fit you. You just have to figure out how to fit into it. You have to find your way to be yourself. This is an extraordinary thing, quite unusual. And so what you have with Jimmy is a man for whom what you see is what you got is the truth. He, even when he says, and I am better off when I am silent, he can't be silent because he is who he is. And it's lovely and it's inspiring. And so I hope that you will be tickled by it and inspired by it, as you will hear that I was. And so here, Jimmy Clark. So I'm here with Jimmy Clark. Do you prefer James?
No.
Do you prefer, you don't prefer, you don't care?
No, it's just, it's some people call me Jimmy, some call me a lot of other worse things, you know. It's,
when you introduce yourself, how do you say, what do you say?
I try not to be pretentious, so I say Jimmy Clark.
Because you think James would be?
Yeah, kind of, you know, not really, but most people make a, you know, some kind of difference between Jimmy and James. And I, you know, my biggest thing in life is not to take myself seriously or anyone else. So, you know, I have a few rules I have to live by.
At least.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'm here with Mr. Clark in the rehearsal space at the ASA.
Right.
And so I always have to explain to everybody, I do this internet radio show. And on it, one of the things I do is interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Mm-hmm. And you're smiling.
I'm always smiling.
So so that's why I'm interviewing you.
Right.
And I always ask people the same question, and that is, how did it happen? How did it find you? How did it start? How did you find it?
What I do for a living?
You acting?
Yeah, it's. I'd like to, you know. Actually, the truth is, when I was a very young child,
yeah,
and I can still remember this being in the Bronx when I was a very young kid, and A Midsummer Night's Dream, a James Cagney one, was
I remember.
And I probably was maybe 5 years old, and I remember watching the movie, you know. Midsummer Night's Dream, and just going, you know what, Mom? That's the world I want to live in.
Yeah.
Because it was just such a magical place, you know, and for a kid in the Bronx, you know, something magical was, you know, that was really great. And I really forgot about that for the longest time, and then when I was in high school, I didn't do any homework in high school, but I went to a very advanced high school on Long Island, and my teacher was very smart.
I'm just curious, where'd you go?
I went to Baldwin High School. At the time, it was a very, very good school system. And the teacher was very smart, because he knew I wasn't going to do homework, but he knew I liked to read. So he told me that, you know, right in the beginning, that he didn't expect me to do any homework or, you know, or write papers or anything.
My God.
He said, but if you read all the things I ask you to read, and I will ask you questions to know if you did, I'll pass you.
This is a brilliant teacher.
It was. He was fantastic, Mr. Lynch. I'll never forget him. And he gave me a lot of advanced reading stuff to read, and among them, Shakespeare. And so...
So you're reading Shakespeare in high school?
Oh, yeah. Since, you know, ninth grade. And all sorts of things. Faulkner, and you were talking about F. Scott Fitzgerald and James Joyce, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, in high school, it was a really good advanced high school education system. Of course, there was no theater. I played football and all that kind of stuff. And so I just was exposed to great literature. And then, you know, when I graduated high school, my mother told me that I was never going to work for a living.
Your mother told you that?
Yeah, my mother. This is my high school graduating class speech. She said, you're never going to work for a living, Jim. So you have to figure out how to make a living as a bum. Because that's all you're ever really going to be.
Oh, my God.
Well, she was very smart.
You were so lucky to be surrounded by people who could see you.
Well, I guess. I guess that's what it is, or I don't know. I just know that my mother knew me very well.
Yeah, but it wasn't pejorative. It wasn't, you're a terrible person and you're never going to, you know.
No.
It was,
no.
This is who you are. Use it.
Right.
You know?
That's exactly what it was. And so I went to college, and of course I went to University of Arizona, which, you know, you just needed, like, you know, a library card to get in at the time. Now it's much harder to get, apparently. I really don't know. But, and then I got into the drama department, and as soon as I got in to the drama department, I remember coming back to Long Island to my mother and saying, you know what, Mom, I figured it out. I know what I'm going to do. And, you know, I told her, and she was like, yeah, that's a good idea.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, she was disappointed that, you know, I wasn't, because she knew I was never going to do anything.
No, she was glad you found it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not as happy as I was.
Ah.
You know, and that's the truth, because I'm very selfish, and I always have been.
I'm sorry, but that does not fit with what you were saying earlier about being sensitive to how other people hear things.
Okay. The introduction of your name, you know, that you use Jimmy because other people could be put off by James.
Right.
This is not selfish, I'm sorry.
Well, growing up, it was thought to be selfish because I was more consumed with what I was going to do with my life than making anybody else happy.
Yeah, you know, this is a soapbox of mine. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I think the word selfish is really used badly and that it's appropriate for young people to be interested in what...
You know, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I never took it, like my mother always told me that and other people in my family, and, you know, that I was very self-consumed. And I was, because... Who else was going to take care of me?
It's age-appropriate. It's what you're supposed to do.
Exactly.
Right.
So, and I felt happy that I had figured out what I was going to do, and I always have been selfish in that way. I mean, I feel for my wife sometimes. I don't, you know, a lot of times I'm consumed by what I do, and I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
And other people, you know, sometimes other people need attention, and you're thinking about what you're worried about.
They
have jobs, too, and just as consuming as yours is, but yet you might not think so. And so, you know, I am aware of those shortcomings. And, you know, in terms of trying to be an artist, it is very consuming, and you do have to find other things. There's no question about that.
You know, I quite often, whenever I can, I interview couples, both of whom make their life or their living with their art.
Right.
And that's a particularly special kind of balancing act. But when artists are in relationship with people who are not also artists, that's a different kind of challenge.
Yeah, well, somebody's got to pay for this mess.
You're doing it again. You get this idea about yourself and you just keep playing it.
No. Listen, I've... You know, in terms of money, I've always contributed because I always have been doing this.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, you're a working actor,
and
for God's sake.
And I used to do television and stuff like that.
Okay, so take me back. So you're in college. You find your home in the drama department.
Yep.
And then what happens?
Well, you know, it wasn't easy for me because I was from, you know, New York and the Bronx, and all of a sudden here I was with kids who had been doing this their whole lives, And they, you know, like, I'll tell you a very funny thing for me anyway. The first time I went to a drama class, I had this teacher, Dale Luciano, and it was a Friday, and he said, okay, on Monday, you all have to be prepared for a monologue, which you're going to do in front of the drama department. And everybody was like, okay, yeah. And so the class ended, and I didn't even want to say anything. I was like, what's a monologue? I have no idea what a monologue is. So I said, well, you have to go get a play. And
told you this?
No. I asked somebody else in the class.
Oh,
I said,
kidding.
I said, yeah, because I didn't know. So I said, what's, you know, so they told me you got to get a speech out of a play. And you're going to say it in front of the drama department. Now, I had never done anything like this. I mean, I'd done oral interpretation where, you know, like you have a speech. And I used to get a rush on that, you know, if you could just like read a little something and, you know, bullshit your way through it or whatever. And so I really didn't think about it. Okay, Friday, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to do this monologue. And then, of course, Sunday came around, and I was like, I still didn't have a monologue or anything like that, and I was supposed to do it in front of the drama department the next day. So Sunday night, I was like, well, I got to do something. What am I going to do? So I went to the library, and I think it was like the second time I'd been to the library, so I didn't even know where to go in the library. So I started going through, and I found this play. Because I didn't know where the plays were. I'm telling you, I'm basically a retard. But I find this play called Dial M for Murder. So I start reading and I'm going, you know, this is kind of cool and everything, but there's no speeches. I said, what am I going to do? So I said, okay, I'll play the cop and I'll just ask questions and make believe they're answering me.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I swear to God.
Oh, my God.
So I do this, and like, I look at it for about an hour, and I go, well, I know the questions, kind of. So finally, the next day comes, and now I'm getting a little bit nervous because I've never done anything like this. And,
right.
And I get up, and I see these kids, and I'm going, man, these kids are great.
Yeah.
They knew all the lines, you know, like, just knowing the lines made them great.
It's a big deal.
And they seemed confident, and I was going, man. And like, all of a sudden, you know, it was like, I was coming, and I was going, man, I don't know if I should do this. And finally, they called my name, and there had to be a couple hundred people there. You know, it was a big drama department. And I get up, and I say, okay, I'm doing a detective from Dial M for Murder, and I start these questions. And about three lines in, I don't know the next question. I don't know what I've said. I don't know anything, right? And I'm sitting there going, okay, this isn't working out very well. So I stop and I go, I'm sorry, can I start over again? Mm-hmm. Brilliant, start over again. So the same exact thing happened and I stopped. And I said, well, I guess I just don't know this well enough. And somebody just went, and I swear, for the next month, I was afraid. Anybody from the trauma department, I was hiding behind trees. I was so embarrassed. And I thought, well, gee, I can't ever do that again.
Wow. That was probably the best thing that ever happened to you.
I don't know if it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Well, it put in perspective what you were going to have to do if you wanted this.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, so as that progressed, the next couple of years, when it came time for the ERTA auditions, which is what they had back then, and I think they still exist, the guy who was the head of the program he wanted me to do it, because they only did two people from each department for the ERTAs. So I went, and then, oddly enough, auditioned and was accepted here at the Oslo.
When was this?
This was 1978.
Oh, my God.
And so I went to the Oslo in 1978 to 80, and then when I graduated the Oslo, I became a member of the company. And I did this like a season and a half, and also worked at Pittsburgh Public, and because somebody from Pittsburgh had seen me in a show here. And I did Biff and Death of a Salesman, and...
It's perfect casting for you.
Yeah, and some agents from New York came to see it, and one of them offered me, himself to be my agent in New York. He was a very pretty famous agent, Michael Bloom. And I said, sure. So when I went to New York, I didn't really have the hard times that a lot of young actors had. The second week I was in New York, I got a soap.
Wow.
Ryan Soap. And I went from, having no money to having...
A lot of money.
A lot of money. Not a ton of money, but...
It was a lot of money.
For me, it was a lot of money.
Right.
Oh,
my God, you're back in New York. You're working a soap.
Yeah.
Oh, that's... Wow.
I was 26.
Wow.
I just got out of school here and doing a little bit of regional theater. And then my life changed, from that point on. I could go out to dinner whenever I wanted to.
I know.
And I could... have an apartment in Manhattan, and I could travel.
You could buy clothes if you wanted them.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
I know.
Obviously, I don't really. But my life became so much easier, and that was just a miracle. And I think, I don't know what I believe in, but I believe that I was not strong enough to make it in this business if I hadn't been lucky, because I know of so many people who have talent, who have worked their asses off and not gotten nearly as far as I did in the second week I was in New York. And I never had to look for an agent. I never, so I don't know if there's another thing, if there's something else out there, but somebody helped me, because I don't think I would have done it otherwise.
I'm good. It's interesting. I talked to Doug yesterday. We had the same conversation, and I have this conversation with most of the artists that I talk to. It's striking, the sense that this was somehow meant, that you were somehow led, that this thing was prepared, that it was something other than you.
Well, that's very interesting, because, I had a really tight friend, who was still a really good friend of mine, this is when I was young, and I was doing soaps and television and stuff, and I said, well, Billy, I believe in destiny. And he said, well, you can afford to believe in destiny.
Yeah, because it's been good to you, right?
That's right.
Right.
So what is, what about the other people out there? And I was like, and then, then you do hit hard times. It's not always,
No, but I'm talking about something else. I'm not actually talking about the success.
Right.
Although that can be a piece of it. I'm talking about the what led you to do it, made it possible for you to do it. It's what you were talking about before, that that you wouldn't have done it if these things hadn't fallen into place, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's actually what I'm talking about, that sometimes there's success in that and sometimes there isn't, but it's almost as though the universe has created a place for you in this.
Well, it's interesting. I know some actors who truly love it all the time.
Yes.
They love performing. They love getting up in front of people, they're just consumed by it and love it.
Right.
And that has never been the case for me. I find it much harder than a lot of people. I really don't like, you know, sometimes getting up in front of people and, you know, exposing certain things. Sometimes I don't. I mean, I have to do it because it's my job. And I can't tell you how many opening nights I went, God, I wish I could get out of this.
Well, you know, I think, forgive me, but I think you're shy.
Well, in a way.
Yeah.
I
know we have this, the Jimmy Clark persona and all that stuff, but that's not what I hear, you know?
Yeah, it's not easy for me. I really am jealous of people who'd like, it's nothing for them. It's like falling off a log. And I sit there and go, man, I wish it was that easy for me, you know? Like, I got to work my ass off.
And when you say you have to work, what do you mean? Do you mean you have to work at learning the role, or do you think, or is all the work about actually getting yourself juice to go on stage?
I think that's a lot of it, and where that comes from is just focus of like what are you trying to do as that character, you know, like.
So you get in it.
Yeah, I almost have to hypnotize myself. I mean, I've got to, like, a lot of people can like talk to a lot of people and then just go on stage.
Yeah.
I don't talk to people, man. You know, like I'm in a corner somewhere talking to myself.
Talking to yourself, talking to the character, being it.
Just trying to figure out what do I want to do when I get out there. What am I trying to get from this person? What do I want, you know, and all those kind of things, and try and really, truly trying to focus. It's so funny because even the part like the husband in
Contact.
Uh-huh. I would walk back and forth the hall and just think about what I wanted to do, and I didn't have many lines. And
right.
It was funny because one of the guards who's right at the front there, this woman came up to me and she said, I'm sorry, but I just have to ask you, you do this every day. What are you doing?
Oh, you're kidding.
No, and I was sitting there, and I looked at it, I was going, part of me wanted to say, I'm trying to get away from people so nobody will bother
me. So talk to me, right?
Because they'll just see me walking down the hall talking to myself. But I said, what I really am trying to do is I'm just trying to think about what I want to do. Just what I want to do. And then trying to focus and do that. And I have to really focus to do it. It's not like I just go out and do it. You know, it's like so many times people said, oh, you know, you're just having so much fun in that show, and it's just so easy. And I said, they're going, no, man, no, it's not. It's
yeah,
not.
But you should know that that's how it looks.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. But for me, it's not as easy as some people. But don't get me wrong. There's a lot of actors who work, you know, have to, like, focus as much as me. But then you meet one who doesn't, and you're like, oh, God damn, how'd you do that? You know, how do you just, like... Like James Mason, I did this little thing with James Mason. He could do that. He could just like...
Really?
Yeah, he just go like that and you go, man, that's just too cool.
Do you think that it will always be like this for you?
Because I've been doing it so long. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. You know, like if I do a show long enough, I can...
Be it.
I can do it pretty quick, you know.
But the problem here is that you don't, really.
Well, no, but once you get into a run and you're in there long enough, you know, you can. No, that's the hardest thing about here. And I think that to me is the thing that most people don't realize is how many shows we're doing.
Yeah, I was talking to Doug yesterday about the difference between Sheepish and Don Waldman. And so... I'd like to talk a little bit about all the roles you're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, even in Contact, the two roles were so different, mm-hmm. right? I mean, the bartender and the husband.
Right. I don't even think about it.
So you're walking up and down doing the husband, and then that's over, and you go out, and then you walk up and down doing the bartender?
Well, no, actually, I would walk up and down do the husband, and then...
The bartender.
After the bartender, I would just lay in the back... And listen to, you know, the other guy doing, you know, the beginning of the second act. And I would just lay there and then just go, I'm just going to mess with him, man. You know, and because that was what the character was doing. It was just like I was his alter ego and I was just playing games with him.
That's easier for you, right?
Well, it was a different... It's a different character. It's a different thought.
So that's interesting because what I hear you saying now is that some characters come more easily than others.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, now if I'm playing any city person, I usually, you know, like, I'm...
I play a lot of gangsters. Right, like the guy in Heart.
Yeah, like the guy in Heart, you know, or I play, like, you know, really mad men and stuff like that. I really don't play a lot of really nice guys, which is fine because the bad guys are more fun.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, people have, you know, a persona, you know, what they think your persona is. And I really don't think about how, every occasion I sit and go, well, how does this character stand? You know.
You mean physically?
Physically.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll think about differences that way, about how they walk and you know, just what they do for a living and, you know. But I don't really think about, wow, this person is so much different than this one. I just try and...
Every single one.
Yeah, I just try and keep reading the play because I think everything good comes out of the script if it's a good script. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to... You can't impose your personality on a part. Or at least I can't. I want to give the author and the character a chance to be themselves. And so if you are true to that, I think that you will play a lot of different characters. You know, I'm not...
Well, ideally, that is what an actor is, right? I mean...
Yeah, but, you know, there are people who play themselves, you know, a lot of movies, you know, like through history,
yeah,
you know, that they play a certain part and that's the only part they'll play.
Yeah.
We play...
Everything.
We play everything, or
right.
We try to. I mean,
well, you get everything. I mean, you are given everything to do.
Yeah, we're given chances to fail in every direction.
You are pretty self-deprecating. Did you know that?
Like I said, the biggest thing in my life is I can't take people seriously. I look around. How can you take anybody seriously? And you know, like I'm a member of a country club right now, and I swear.
I'm sorry.
I know. And the only reason I'm a member is because it's like where I live, and I get to play golf. I can. But to listen to the people, I mean, how could I take people seriously?
So what do you do with that? I mean, are you nice?
Well, no, I'm not. You know, like I it's interesting. I was driving with my wife mm-hmm. the other day. We were driving up to Tampa, going to IKEA, which I didn't know what a terrible experience that was going to be. But, you know, I saw that, like, they had these big motor homes going up there. And Patty and I have traveled a lot. So, mm-hmm. you know, I was sitting there going, you know, Pat, I just don't think I could ever do a motor home. She said, why? I said, because I'm just not friendly. I'm just not friendly enough.
Right, right.
I mean, you got to open yourself up. You go into those trailer parks
right.
and stuff, you know. You've got to, you need help and you need, you know. Never do that.
And anyway, that is really the point of it. I mean, people who do that, that's what they want.
Yeah.
Right.
I couldn't do it. I mean, Patty and I did do it in Western Australia. We did it, and I was like, it was interesting. You know, not that it was humbling because we met a lot of nice people, but, you know, a lot of times there were people like you sitting there going, man, this is the Wild West. I mean, you imagine what the Wild West was like in America, you know, 100 years ago. Well, that is the Western Australia. I mean, you're out there, motorcycle gangs, you know, insane people.
Right.
So, you know, and you've got to, like, you got to open up to people. And that's not easy for me.
No.
So I, you know, talk about acting, yeah, you know, it's a little bit easier for me there because it's not me.
Right.
But you know, I'm not really a nice person. I mean, you know what I mean? I'm not, like, overly nice. And I do like...
That's so funny. You are. You're incredibly nice. That's not... I think I know what you're saying, but nice is not the right word. You're not available. You're not accessible. You're not interested. I don't know.
Yes, all of those things. I'm just not.
Right.
I'm not. I'm
right,
not.
But that's got nothing to do with nice.
Oh, it doesn't.
No, I'm so sorry. No.
Oh, I said it. You know, like, I know I have problems.
I think...
No, you know what I mean? I know that I go to that country club and I listen to people talk. I just can't believe that they're just consumed by themselves. They're so consumed with them.
Yeah. And what they have and what they did and what they're getting and where they went and all that.
And
stuff,
how much
right?
they're giving away and this and that and how, you know. And I sit there and just go, man, just shut up and listen to yourselves.
Right. Who cares?
Yeah, who cares?
Right, yeah.
You know, get in line, pal.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like, I've had people tell me, just move over, man. And I sit there and go, excuse me, I've been here.
What does that mean, just move over, man?
Well, like on the driving range.
Right.
Like, all of a sudden, there'll be 10 guys, and they'll
right.
say, can you move over? And I'll sit there and go, okay. And I got to the point, like, this happened to me, like,
because they want all to be together?
Well, yeah, and you know, you're taking, you know, space. And all of a sudden, so like, I would move a couple of times. Then finally, like, this one guy said something to me, and I just was, like, bad. I was just bad. And I do that on a regular basis.
Oh, tell me what you said.
Oh, I told him. What did I tell him? The guy was behind me. Of course, he wouldn't say anything to me. He's going, well, I guess, you know, I don't have any room in here.
Oh, you're kidding.
And I'm sitting there and I go, hey, listen, you really want to know what I really said?
Yeah, I do.
I said, listen, motherfucker, if you want me to move over, just ask me. Yeah. Don't talk. Just ask me. So I move over and then I said, just don't hit me in the fucking head. And the other friend, now the other buddy is right there.
Right,
and he goes, hey, listen, pal, you are just an asshole. Great. And where do you, perchance? You know, it's just like, you know, like the little child, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's going, we're nice guys. I said, yeah,
we're
I know.
Nice
I hear you
guys.
Every day. I hear how nice you are every day.
Did you really do this?
Well, I'm known for this.
Oh, I see. So you have a reputation to uphold.
Well, it's not that I have a reputation. It's just hard for me to...
Yeah.
With people who have no consideration for other people. It drives me insane.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the you don't suffer fools.
I know, and I hate to say that because I'm the biggest fool I know. All I know is I root for people and I like to be nice to people. I like to respect people, but I demand the same.
Yeah. That's not bad.
I don't think it is. I mean, no. I think I'd be further along in life if I didn't feel that way. Because, you know, it's like I've always wanted to teach, you know, in the university system. And my wife said, Jimmy, you'll never get a job. It'll never work out. It's like my mother again, right?
Yeah, right.
I said, why? She said, because you'll just tell somebody what you think, and that's
and
not...
And they'll say, thank you very much, we don't want to...
Right, and you won't, you know, you won't be involved in the politics, and you know, so you won't be able to do it. And she's probably right. But
so have you, I mean, this is so obvious, but one does not have to teach within a system in order to teach.
Well, I taught... in a professional setting in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. I was artistic director. I had a partner on at the theater, Taylor Gilbert, and her husband is a huge producer, so we had like access to a million different things, and you know, and I taught there with professional actors,
right.
And I had great satisfaction doing that. But I've always wanted to have really. The reason I went to the Oslo in the first place was because I wanted to teach a university system because I felt like what had happened to me at Arizona changed my life. And I felt like I could share that.
Yeah.
And I think that I can inspire young people to work a little bit harder, think a little bit more, you know, to realize if they want to be really good at this, mm-hmm. what they have to try and do. And so that was always my purpose. But it just never... I mean, I've only applied for two jobs. Yeah, and I didn't get either one. One was the University of Arizona, which they didn't even... I mean, like, I have a pretty good resume just because I've been doing this for so long. They didn't even get in contact with me, which makes me think they probably already had somebody in mind. And then another school I applied to was Duke. And I knew they had a really good golf course. And I figured it was really good. You know, it would be a beautiful campus and really smart kids.
Yeah.
And... So those are the only places I applied to, because I don't want to go to, like, Iowa or Nebraska.
No, God forbid.
I'm just not going.
I know.
I'm not going.
I know.
You know, you have to pay, but I think I've paid in other ways, you know. But anyway, that's what I wanted to do, but it just never worked out. But I have taught on, you know, and it's interesting, you know, everybody, it seems like it's competition, and art should never be competition. Art is art.
Yeah, I know.
Art is trying to be better at what you do. It's trying to communicate more. It's trying to tell the truth. And when competition and jealousies become involved in teaching and stuff like that, that's a big turnoff to me. So,
well, you don't fit the mold, mold.
No, I
really,
don't.
Really, right. And unfortunately, you live in a society, maybe they're all like this, I'm not sure. But you live in a society that... is only really comfortable with stereotypes, with people who fit in whatever mold it is, you know, that because then they can anticipate, they know what to expect from you,
right.
That, you know, they're not surprised, they're not put off balance, you know,
right.
like what you did with the guys in the...
Right.
In the... the
yeah,
the
I got guys, that, I got that club in my bag, you know, it's just, and it comes out.
Yeah, well, what I'm thinking is that in the driving range, what you were supposed to do was move.
Right.
You know, that the rules were such that the rules are established.
Right.
That people say these things, other people hear them, and then they have the, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't realize you wanted this space or that I was getting in your way or whatever, and let me move. Okay?
Right.
Right. So that's the way it was supposed to go. That was the script. But you don't have that script. Right? And you don't have that script in a lot of places. So it makes it really difficult. So essentially what your mother said was exactly right. That you have to figure out a way to write your own script.
Yeah, because I'm definitely living a different life. There's no question about that.
Yeah. And again, that brings me back to the idea that I find myself so interested in, that for some people, the thing makes itself possible. Because if I'm right about you, and you don't fit the mold, you don't have the script, whatever the hell it is, you needed the world to make a space for you. It's what you said, people work and work and work and work and work, they don't get anywhere, right? Well, you didn't even know how to do that, work and work and work and work and work, but a space got made for you somehow, right?
Yeah. It's like I said, I feel so fortunate, and I think, that's what I feel for most people. They don't have a calling, not that I want to call it a calling, but, just for lack of a better word, they don't have, when I figured out what it was, I figured it out.
That's right.
So it was easy in a sense.
Yeah,
I know what I want to do.
The theme of my show is discovering who you really are and then trying to become it, because I think most people are not. And the reason I interview artists is because, at least in that area of their life, artists are who they are. You can't do this in this culture unless it's really who you are. And so what I think happened is you found who you were. Not what you wanted to do, but actually who you were. You were an actor.
Yeah, well, it's true, because I don't do, like I said, I don't do this because I like it.
No.
I don't do it for it's easy. I do it because it's what I do.
Yes, it's who you are.
Yeah, I mean, when I was doing plays in Los Angeles for free.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, I got to go do this play. I got to be busy. It's just what I do.
I know.
It's just, I don't know what else to do.
And all of the artists say that. All of them do. And one of the reasons, again, that I interview artists for the show is because when I talk to people who have this, it's demonstrable, it's clear, it's obvious what it's like to really be yourself in any area of your life. I mean, because actors are not necessarily... See, I think you're yourself everywhere, but not everybody is. And it's my hope that people who are out there pretending to be who they're not, who haven't found it, will hear what it sounds like when you are it, and know that it's possible. It's possible because I think your life is really interesting because so many people have the experience of demonstrating something about themselves and then having that squashed. Don't do that. Don't be that. What are you doing? Who do you think you are? That's not right. But from the beginning, you had the acceptance, really, from your mother that this was who you were. And then you had that incredible teacher who didn't want to lay on you, no, that's not right. You're not the stereotype. Do it differently. But wanted to let you be who you were.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Well, I was really fortunate with teachers. I had a couple of those. I had, like I said, Mr. Lynch with literature, and then when I went into theater at Arizona, this guy, Bill Prosser, was just fantastic and really changed my life more than anybody. And, of course, he died of AIDS about 15 years ago, 15 or 20 years ago, I guess now. But you have those people in your life that make a huge difference.
And if you have them.
If you have them. And I have had them.
Like
I said, that's why I wanted to get into teaching. I felt like I could do that for somebody. I could allow them to be themselves.
It's not too late.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not. It's just I'm the laziest man alive. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that's such.
Well, no, it's true. I mean, I am. I go to what's easy. You know what I mean? I'm water. I'm just going where the crack is. And right now...
Yeah, but you know what's so interesting about that? is that the cracks opened up for you. You could, because they did, you know?
Yeah, I haven't... it's just hard, you know, in a way, it's just hard sometimes people really... When you are yourself...
Yes.
A lot of people can't take you seriously...
In another context.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
And that, and that's like one of the hard things for me, is a lot of people can't take me seriously because...
Because you come off in this sort of...
Yes, flippant...
Smart-ass way.
Yeah, whatever it is. I don't know.
Yes, you do know.
Yeah, you know, so like I know it's hard, you know, like even this place, you know, I mean, like it's very hard for people, everybody to take me seriously here. Not on stage or anything like that, but as a human being.
Do you want to say something more about that?
No.
No, and you've been so amazingly candid on what?
It's funny.
You know,
a lot of times when
you're blushing, you know that.
I don't know anything.
That's not even close to true.
I do know that the less I talk, the better I do.
Ah.
Do you know what I mean?
I do.
And that's usually my policy. But since this is such a weird, you know, interview or whatever it is, you know, I know I'm not going to be reading it in the paper tomorrow.
No, you won't.
See, because that's the thing is,
I will send this to you if you like, and you can decide what you don't want me to have in.
Well, no, it's pretty much, I don't think I've done any lying.
No, you haven't. No, you haven't. It's just the opposite. Yeah. But what's so interesting about what you just said about, you know, when the less I talk, the more, the better I do, I think that has much less to do with you. I'm just going to make the same point that I'm making over and over again, than it has to do with the culture. The culture has this idea about who we should be.
Well, it just seems like they, you know, a lot of times people want to get you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They just want to get you. And you could say something, I mean, like, that's what kills me about television, you know. You say one wrong thing, and that's all they dwell on.
Yeah.
I mean, whether it's Obama, whether it's whoever it is.
When you say get you, do you mean as in gotcha, or they want to understand you?
No. They got you.
Yeah. Right.
Just, listen to what they... And that determines who you are. Well, no, it doesn't.
No.
But people want to make it that. People want to put people...
In a box.
In a box and say, this is who you are. And I'm sorry. It's much more complicated than that. That's like, you know, like when I read in the paper, oh, this person did this, and therefore they're this. I don't believe that.
Yeah, but you're probably a minority of one.
Probably, and I think that's the saddest thing in the world.
I do too.
People can judge other people without even spending 5 minutes with them.
You should teach. You should teach, because this is a gift that not very many people can offer. I mean, I know you're a wonderful actor, Jimmy, and you would be a wonderful acting teacher. But this gift, the gift to encourage people to be all of themselves and not to start pruning the things that they don't think will work or that other people don't like, that's an amazing gift.
Well, I think a lot of people, you know, it's interesting because I was going to direct this thing last year, you know, late night project, and I was talking to some of the young actors, and I was like, don't make any decisions yet. You don't have to. Just keep reading it and let it come to you. Don't impose what you think it's about. Figure out what it's about.
Find it.
And then you got some place to go. And it was so hard for a couple of people, you know, that I worked with. The project didn't end up coming off. But I just felt like these people don't trust themselves.
That's right. And why should they? Because from the beginning, somebody was saying, this is who you have to be. This is what you shouldn't do. Don't do this. What are you doing? Who do you think you are?
Yeah, and I think that's an inherent problem, you know, with school and graduate programs and everything else is...
And parenting, hello.
Yeah, and everybody's saying, well, you know, you they'll criticize this, they'll criticize that, they'll criticize that, but they don't say, hey, you know what, that was really great.
No, that's right.
That was great. Think about this a little bit. That's not what I hear. I hear, oh, you know, this sucked, blah, 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 you know, and people end up beating themselves up and become defeatist. And instead of saying, you know, instead of giving it some encouragement and saying, listen, that was really good. Why don't you think about this? Why don't you think about that? It's mind-boggling. And, you know, in my business, I see that with so many directors.
Really?
Especially with young actors. You can destroy a young actor, a director.
Yeah.
You know? They'll say things like, okay, this scene, I need you to cry. And they'll say this in front of the whole cast. Young actor, who's, you know, he's got talent, but, you know, is on the line.
Right.
And all of a sudden they'll be like, really? And the director will say, yeah, you know, right here, I want you to break down. And okay, so then you have 15 people in the rehearsal hall. Okay, let's go. And all 15 people are waiting for this person
to cry
and do all this. And I sit there and go, how stupid.
Right.
How stupid. Why don't you just go up to the person?
Right.
Why don't you just take them aside and say, hey, listen, you know what? You got to go a little deeper here, man. What's actually happening at this moment? What can you equate it to in your own life? That's how important it's got to be. It's got to be that important. Go deeper. Go deeper. And then nobody's watching. Nobody feels
right,
this
right,
pressure.
Right, right.
But I see that so often. I sit there and go, you know, like, how did you get this job?
because they knew how to look the stereotype.
Well, I think, I should just shut up. And that's basically all I have to say.
All right. Okay. I am very grateful for your willingness to be as open as you are. And I think you absolutely should teach. I think you should give this away. I think this is a gift that you know is not out. Most people aren't giving it, and so most people aren't getting it.
Yeah, I really, it's so unfortunate when I see, you know, people, I just feel like there is a key, and if you could just help
them. Yes, find it, and that would be who they are, then they could be who they are.
Yeah, in all different ways.
Yes, of course, in
all
different
ways.
I know.
You know, not just, you know, I've seen a lot of acting students come through here, and 90%, over 90%, are never going to be a professional actor.
Right.
But I can't tell you how many of them turn into just incredible people because they have exposed themselves to other things, to thinking where other people are coming from.
Yeah.
So it isn't always, this is the way I am, and, you know, like...
God damn it.
Yeah, you know, you should get out of my way.
Right.
Well, no, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe you should ask me to get out of your way.
Right.
You know, or maybe, you know, it's just amazing to me, given just a little bit of encouragement, how far people can go. And if you can just clue into that.
Yeah. All right, so I'm boring myself by saying yet again that it would be wonderful if you could find a way to give some of this away.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much. This was great.
Yeah, I usually do better when I... say less.
I don't think that's the truth. I think that the chances are good that other people are more comfortable with you when you say less, but I don't think it has anything to do with you being better.
Yeah. Well, I just do better. Cheers.
Bye.
And that is the outspoken, very much who he is, Jimmy Clark. And I hope that you enjoyed that interview as much as you can tell I was enjoying doing it. And as I tried to say over and over in the interview, that's an example of a person who is who he really is. And not just on stage, but in every context of his life, in this interview with me. Even though he said, I think I do better when I don't talk so much, he talked, because it is who he is. And as I said in the interview, that's what this show is about trying to find the who you really are and being willing to risk it, being willing to be that person. And as Jimmy pointed out pretty much over again, it doesn't always work in the world. And that's, of course, why so many of us don't do it. But as is also clear from this interview, when you are who you really are, there will be people who want that. There will be people who can be comfortable with someone who is, this is the psychological term for it, congruent. not pretending, not having a mask, not coming from their cover story. Cover story being a concept I talk a lot about in this show. The story that you created about who you are, which contains much of who you are, but not all. So, of course, we're all trained. Well, apparently we're not all trained, but most of us are trained to come from that cover story. And Jimmy was lucky enough to have a mommy who said, "Ooh, that's who you are. That's who you are, my son. Not don't be that," or "Oi, I don't want that." But that's who you are. And you're going to have to find a way to fit that who you are in the world, not to try and fit yourself to the world. So I'm really hoping that you heard this in this interview. And of course, as I always say, I hope you got something you can use from this show. Something that interested you, or something that compelled you, or something that annoyed you even. But before I end the show, I need to thank Josh Hackney, who I always thank, because I continually run into things I don't know how to do. And Josh continually saves my life. And so if you have any issues with computers or recordings or electronics or anything related to that, you really want Josh Hackney, because he always knows the answers. And he's always gentle and kind with them. And that is who he really is. Okay, so again, I hope you heard something that's going to bring you back next week, because I will be here, same time, same station. And boy, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I got some tang, so